Hello and welcome to the May 2013 IFRIC Update podcast. My name is Michael Stewart, Director of Implementation Activities at the ISB staff, and I'm joined today by three of the team members, Thomas Hartsheim, Leo Piombino and Denise Durant. And we're going to take a look at some of the issues that were discussed at the May Interpretations Committee meeting when the committee met on the 14th and 15th of May 2013. One thing to note before we start, the views that you'll hear will be those of the presenters, which may not necessarily be those of the IFRS Interpretations Committee or the ISB. First issue we want to turn to relates to IAS 12 income taxes and a question related to the recognition of deferred tax assets for unrealised losses. Now, the committee discussed this at the May meeting. Thomas, can you tell us more about what this issue is about?
Yes, the Interpretations Committee was asked to provide guidance on how an entity determines, in accordance with IAS 12 income taxes, whether to recognize a deferred tax asset when the entity has A, deductible temporary differences relating to an unrealized loss on debt instruments that are classified as available for sale financial assets in accordance with IAS 39, financial instruments, recognition and measurement, and measured at fair value. Second, has the ability and intention to hold the instruments until the loss reverses, which may be at their maturity. And third, has insufficient taxable temporary differences and no other probable future taxable profits against which the entity can utilize that deductible temporary difference. Following a recommendation from the Interpretations Committee, the ISB proposed an amendment to IAS 12 in its exposure draft, annual improvements to IFRS's 2010 to 2012 cycle, published in May 2012 to clarify the accounting for such deferred tax assets. After analyzing the comment letters received on the exposure draft, the ISB agreed with the Interpretations Committee that clarifying the accounting for deferred tax assets for unrealized losses on debt instruments measured at fair value requires addressing two further issues that were not explicitly addressed in the exposure draft. These issues are, first, whether an unrealized loss on a debt instrument measured at fair value gives rise to a deductible temporary difference when the holder expects to recover the carrying amount of the asset by holding it to maturity and collecting all the contractual cash flows. And second, whether an entity can assume recovery of an asset for more than its carrying amount when estimating probable future taxable profits against which deductible temporary differences can be utilized. Furthermore, the ISB tentatively decided at its December 2012 meeting that the accounting for deferred tax assets for unrealized losses on debt instruments measured at fair value should be clarified by a separate narrow scope amendment to IAS 12. This is because A, the issue of whether an entity can assume that it will recover an asset for more than its carrying amount when estimating probable future taxable profits should be addressed in a separate narrow scope project, and B, such a project which goes beyond clarifications and corrections, that is a project with a broader scope than annual improvements, also allows for discussing whether to amend IAS 12 to achieve an outcome for deferred tax accounting that would be consistent with the one that was recently discussed by the FASB for the same type of instruments.
Okay, so as a result of this discussion that the ISB had in December, this issue has now come back to the Interpretations Committee for further discussion along these lines, focusing on these two new areas. Now, you mentioned the issues or discussions from the FASB. Can you tell us more about those FASB discussions and how they interact with this proposal?
Yes, the FASB discusses a similar issue related to deferred taxes within its in the context of its project on accounting for financial instruments, and it proposes in its proposed accounting standards update financial instruments Subtopic 825-10, Recognition and Measurement of Financial Assets and Financial Liabilities, published in February this year, that an entity evaluates the need for valuation allowance on deferred tax assets related to unrealized losses on a financial instrument classified in the fair value for other comprehensive income category separately from the entity's other deferred tax assets. The need for a valuation allowance should not be evaluated in combination with other deferred tax assets of the entity. Although the project on accounting for financial instruments is a joint project of the FASB and the ISB does not address deferred tax accounting as part of the joint project.
Okay, so in fact the FASB have been effectively discussing the same issues as the Interpretations Committee and the ISB have been looking at. So can you summarise the results of the Interpretation Committee discussions from this meeting?
At this meeting, the Interpretations Committee decided to recommend to the ISB that it should amend IS 12 to clarify that deferred tax assets for unrealized losses on debt instruments measured at fair value are recognized unless recovering the debt instrument by holding it until the unrealized loss reverses does not reduce future tax payments and instead only avoids higher tax losses. This recommendation is based on the conclusion that first, an unrealized loss on a debt instrument measured at fair value gives rise to a deductible temporary difference when the holder expects to recover the carrying amount of the asset by holding it to maturity and collecting all the contractual cash flows. And second, an entity can assume that it will recover an asset for more than its carrying amount when estimating probable future taxable profits. In addition, the Interpretations Committee understood that its recommendation would not always achieve an outcome for the deferred tax accounting that would be consistent with the one that was recently discussed and proposed by the FASB. It expects that this will be the case if recovering the debt instrument by holding it until an unrealized loss reverses does not reduce future tax payments and instead only avoids higher tax losses.
Okay, so the key here, the focus for the Interpretations Committee is on whether or not we're reducing future tax payments as a consequence of these reversal of the unrealized losses.
Yes, yes.
So what are the next steps in this limited scope project to amend IS 12?
The Interpretations Committee noted at its meeting that its recommended amendment to IS 12 and an amendment that it also discussed, which is the amendment that achieves an outcome for deferred tax accounting that would be consistent with the one that was recently discussed and proposed by the FASB, would be significantly different. It therefore decided to consult with the ISB on the approach that is to be the basis for the amendment before discussing further details and drafting a proposed amendment. Following the consultation with the ISB, the staff will present an analysis discussing further details, a recommendation, and a draft proposed amendment to IS 12 in a future meeting.
Okay, so we're going to report back to the ISB the results of the committee's discussions. Highlighting the fact that the committee's recommendation wouldn't necessarily give the same outcome as the FASB, and then seeking input or direction from the ISB as a result of that, bring it back to the Interpretations Committee to develop the proposed wording to meet the intended objective.
Correct.
Great. Thank you. Our next topic we want to turn to now relates to an issue arising with IFRS 5 non-current assets held for sale and discontinued operations. Now, Denise, can you tell us about what this issue is and what the Interpretations Committee have discussed on this?
Yes, sure. We received a request to clarify the application of the guidance in IFRS 5 regarding the classification of a non-current asset or disposal group as held for sale. And this request had two fact patterns that we had to consider. We had a preliminary discussion at the March 2013 meeting, and then we continued with these discussions at the May meeting. So The first fact pattern that we considered was a case of a disposal plan that is intended to be achieved by means of an initial public offering, but where the prospectus, and by this we mean the legal document with an initial offer, has not been approved by the securities regulator. So the submitter requested the interpretations committee to clarify whether this disposal group would qualify as held for sale before the prospectus is approved by the securities regulator. And this is all assuming that all the other criteria in IFRS 5 for the sale to be considered highly probable have been fulfilled.
So what guidance does IFRS 5 already have relation to IPOs and disposal via an offering?
Well, in fact, IFRS 5 doesn't contain specific guidance in this respect. There is only guidance in paragraphs 6 to 9 that allows management to make its own judgment on whether a sale would be highly probable or not. So if you look closely at this guidance, and more specifically the guidance in paragraph 8, well, you note that there are some criteria that a disposal group or a non-current asset have to fulfill in order for the sale to be highly probable. And the first three criteria there in this paragraph represent an event-driven assessment where management determines whether certain events have occurred or not. And there are other three criteria there in that paragraph that will require management to make its own assessment about the probability of occurrence of certain events.
Can you give us an example of this?
So, in respect of the fact pattern that we receive and regarding the specific question we were asked about the role that a prospectus plays in this highly probable assessment, we think that management could question or could ask whether the prospectus is a main vehicle to achieve the sale. For example, is it the main sales document, or is it in my jurisdiction just a simple administrative step to achieve the sale? Or, for example, in terms of obtaining the approval of the prospectus by the authority, management could question, well, what is the management's experience of receiving approval in the past for the issue of a prospectus, or has there been any rejections by a securities regulator in this respect?
Okay, and I guess another thing perhaps to look at is what other marketing activity is being undertaken by the entity in pursuit of this disposal. For example, speaking with institutional shareholders in preparation for the listing.
Yes, sure. I mean, this is a matter of judgment, and that's our conclusion here in regard to this topic. So, on the basis of its analysis, Interpretations Committee determined that there is enough guidance in IFRS 5 to make this highly probable assessment. So the Interpretations Committee decided to issue a tentative agenda decision that you will be able to find in the next May 2013 IFRIC update. So we are expecting your comments.
And comments are open until 29th of July.
That's right. And they will be analysed at the future meeting.
Okay. So that was the first issue. You said there were two issues. What's the other one?
Yeah, we receive a second fact pattern. And this second fact pattern is, assume that there is a change in the disposal plan from a plan to sale to a plan to spin off a division and issue a dividend in kind. So this is a change from a sale to a...
Okay, so that's one issue. You said there were two issues. What's the other one?
Yeah, well, we receive a second fact pattern to consider a situation where there is a change in a disposal plan from a plan to sell to a plan to spin off a division and issue a dividend in kind to the shareholders. So the question is, would this qualify as a change to a plan of sale in accordance with the current guidance in IFRS 5?
And again, what is the current guidance that's in IFRS 5 about change to a plan to sale?
Well, first of all, in accordance with the guidance in IFRS 5, and more specifically in paragraph 26, An entity would cease to classify a disposal plan as held for disposal when it stops, when it stops meeting the criteria in paragraph 6-9. So this includes the highly probable criteria. So this means that an entity would need to continue monitoring these criteria in order to stop the held for sale accounting. And on the other hand, well, what we observed, what the Interpretations Committee observed, is that IFRS 5 lacks a specific guidance on this situation in particular. That we were asked when an entity reclassifies an asset from held for sale to held for distribution or vice versa. And also, well, what happens when an entity no longer meets the criteria for held for distribution? What do you do in those cases?
Okay. So we've got guidance on what happens when you cease to meet the criteria for held for sale, but not when you cease to meet the criteria for held for distribution.
That's correct. Yes, that's correct. So, well, in this respect, the Interpretations Committee determined that the measurement guidance in paragraphs 27 to 29 relating to the discontinuation of the held for sale accounting, well, was not meant to be applied in the circumstances described in the fact pattern submitted. And this is because the conditions required by paragraph 8 for a sale to be considered highly probable are very similar to the conditions required by paragraph 12A for a distribution to be considered highly probable. So what's the conclusion? Well, they should follow the same accounting. And so then the Interpretations Committee decided to issue a proposal for an annual improvement to state very clearly and very specifically that a change or reclassification from held for sale to held for distribution or vice versa should not be considered a new classification and should lead instead to the continuation of the same accounting principles. And also, the Interpretations Committee decided to clarify that when an entity ceases to meet the criteria for held for distribution, it should also follow the accounting guidance for a change to a plan of sale.
Provided, of course, that it doesn't immediately qualify as held for sale.
Yeah, that's
right.
Correct.
Yes, okay. So what happens next?
So in this respect, we are planning to, to take this annual improvement proposal to a future ISB meeting. And if it is approved by ISB, then it will be part of the annual improvements 2012-2014 cycle.
Great. Thank you. So the next step would be an ED after the ISB meeting.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. The next issue that we want to look at is one related to IAS 19 and employee benefits, and in particular, actuarial assumptions and discount rate. Now, Leo, I don't think this is the first time we've talked about this, is it?
No.
So where are we now?
Yes. Thanks, Michael. Yes, the committee discussed this issue several times. And in particular, in the March meeting, the committee requested us to prepare a proposal for a narrow scope amendment to IAS 19. Consequently, for the May meeting, we have prepared amendments based on the indication provided by the Interpretation Committee and the ISB in the previous meetings.
Can I just pause us there? The next issue that we want to turn to relates to an issue on IAS 19 and employee benefits, and in particular, the actuarial assumptions and discount rate. Now, Leo, this isn't the first time that we've talked about this, is it? Where are we now on this issue?
Yes, thank you. The original question asked by the submitter was whether corporate bonds with a rating lower than AA can be considered high-quality corporate bonds in accordance with IAS 19. The committee discussed this issue several times and tried to address this issue with a narrow scope amendments. For the May meeting, we prepared amendments based on the indication provided by the Interpretation Committee and by the ISB in the previous meetings. In summary, for the May meeting, we prepared a narrow scope amendments where we recommend to delete paragraph 83 of IAS 19 to replace this paragraph with implementation guidance. And also we propose to amend paragraph 84 of IAS 19 to provide an objective to determine the discount rate. This objective, in summary, was time value of money plus a very low amount of credit risk. After considering our proposal, the committee decided that our proposed amendment was too broad. Consequently, we refocus our work on the original question asked by the submitter, and for the next meeting we will prepare an analysis on whether high quality is a relative or an absolute concept. Depending on the conclusion of this analysis, the interpretation committee will decide to issue a tentative agenda decision or some application guidance or a limited amendment to the standards.
Okay, good. Thank you. So something to look forward to for the July meeting?
Yes.
Yes, good. Well, that brings us to an end for this IFRIC Update podcast. Just a reminder that the full details of the proceedings of the IFRS Interpretations Committee from May 2013 can be found in the IFRIC Update newsletter that is published on the IFRS website. That's ifrs.org. And also a reminder that the tentative agenda decisions that are set out in IFRIC Update are open for comment until 29th July 2013. So we do ask that you take a look at those and write to us if you've got comments on those. And then those will be discussed at the 2013 September meeting of the Interpretations Committee. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.